Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to this week's episode of Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler, yours truly, the host of today's show. I have to excuse my amazing co-host and partner, Matt Sorensen, who has taken a much-needed vacation after the year-end legal push. December and January are always nuts for us, and I got a little break last week, and so this week I'm covering for Matt. So welcome. If you're new to the show, we're here every week providing tax and legal tips, trying to keep it interesting on your quest to better live your American dream. Let me say now, next week is our open forum show, which we do live, and we take call-ins and email questions. If you want to start emailing in those questions, you can send them to Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com, or Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkos, as in Sam, lawyers, lawyers.com. If you're on our weekly newsletter, which I hope many of you already are, there's links to the show each week and the description of the prior week's show, the emails to send in a question. Also, we publish a weekly YouTube video, important tax deadlines, and usually a couple of articles. We've got hundreds of articles now in our, catalog of blog articles for you to view at your leisure. We hope that you are captaining your ship. You're getting good tax and legal advice so that you can hire better professionals in your life, hire better employees and support team members. We want you to get the best advice you can, and that's what the purpose of our newsletter is. If you haven't signed up yet, get over to refreshyourwealth.com. Lots of important info there. And you can sign up and get a free ebook written by both Matt and I, two different ebooks that are free, great reading at night. If you can't sleep at night, we've got some good tax and legal info for you to read. And I'm just joking. It's good stuff. You'll stay up all night reading. You won't be able to stop your mind racing with strategies and ideas. Now, this week, you've got me solely as your host of the show. We're going to be bringing on a special guest later, Jerem Bergesen, a SEC securities attorney that works out of our office helping clients raise money for their businesses. And we're going to talk about crowdfunding, setting up your own PPM or hedge fund, kind of your own fund to raise capital and manage it for others and, you know, make some money, as well as making money for your investors. We'll talk about partnering, a little bit of lending. These are all important words. I call it OPM. Other people's money. And I think it's great if you can go out and raise capital with others and help you build your dream or your business. You don't have to do it all on your own. That's okay. There's rules to follow. And if you follow those rules, it can be phenomenal. I just had a client the other day that sold his business, an aspect of his business. He's so successful. Everything he touches turns to gold. And He took a trip to Bora Bora and Tahiti and was reading my tax and legal playbook on the deck of his little shack over the water. It's just one of those picturesque, beautiful shacks. I've never been there and done that. I hope to do that someday. And he's got this picture of my tax and legal playbook right there on the deck, looking out over the crystal blue turquoise water. We posted that on social media. It was kind of fun. But the point is that I'm bringing up is that he used other people's money to build that business. It was very successful, and that doesn't happen to everybody. There's risks involved, of course. But if you've got a dream and you don't have the money, it's okay. There's ways to raise capital. So we're going to be talking about that later in the show and what some of the rules are. It's a big topic. but also where you can get more information on that. So that's the topic of today's show. Now, before we get there, we usually do a tax and legal tip. And it's my honor to be the one to share a tax and legal tip. And it, of course, because I wear the hat as a lawyer and a CPA, I get to, that means I'm twice as boring as anyone else. I'm going to take the liberties of sharing both a tax and legal tip. They're short, to the point, and I think you're going to love them. But let's start with a legal tip first.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, this week's legal tip is about basic asset protection. I want to make two points here. I had a client call me up today that was part of my schedule. We're setting up a couple entities for this woman and her husband and her daughter, who all are working together in a couple different business projects. It was fun to talk about. And they lived in Oregon, and they had been told that they should set up their entity in Nevada. And they should have two or three entities because they're doing two or three things. Now, on the face of it, hey, the more entities you have, probably a little bit better protection you have, but is it really necessary? And so they were going through this process of deciding what to do and called me, thank heavens, and we talked about the pros and cons of setting up entities in Nevada or multiple entities. It wasn't all just a Nevada topic. There was multiple things going on. And so I went through this process of, okay, if you do this, what are you really signing up for? And we went through the cost of maintaining these entities and keeping separate checking and separate contracts and relationships. And they were like, oh my gosh, this is a ton of work. And I said, yeah, but if you were making $1 million a year, I would tell you to do it and we'd be there to help support it. But you're not making $1 million a year. And it's so affordable to just do good quality basic protection with one entity. Do multiple businesses out of one entity. It's okay. I'd rather have you do good basic asset protection techniques with one entity than set up four companies and be shooting from the hip. Because if you don't follow the procedures with four entities, it's going to all fall apart and you're going to be back to square one anyway. So some of those good basic practical tips are just doing annual minutes, even if you have an LLC. Don't think because you have an LLC you can cut corners. You want to have annual minutes. You want to have a good operating agreement. You want stock certificates, separate checking. Follow those procedures. Now, just a few weeks ago, we talked about this for an entire show. But I felt I wanted to bring it up because of two different phone calls today. I won't even bring up the other one. But they were related. Same topic. And this weekend, February 18th, is our deadline for our annual company maintenance special. Where for just $99, a team of paralegals will look over your documents, get your minutes done for this year, and if you need to do a cleanup, they'll identify it, give you the cost to do some extra little paperwork to get your company set up and cleaned up, and then you don't have to stress about it. Well, if you get to our newsletter, if you get to our website, kkoslawyers.com, that special is this weekend, and it ends on Sunday. Now, if you don't get there before the deadline, and you're listening to this show down the road, guys, our cost is normally only $150. So it's not the end of the world. It's only $50 more throughout the year to get this crap done and get organized. But we do a little special, and I thought I'd highlight that. Get over to the website, sign up, secure the rate. Paralegals will be in touch with you next week. They'll start dialing it in. And Becky Lloyd, my head paralegal over company maintenance, is just phenomenal. Wonderful lady. So fun to talk to. So concerned about the customer's experience, and she'll bend over backwards with her team to help you. And so please get with her and talk about your options, and she'll get you dialed in. So that's a legal tip. So, and if I had to summarize in one sentence, there's some way I've got to say this better, but I just want to say, don't chase your tail with three or four unique strategies and ignore the basics. The basics will protect you more than the fluff of wild and crazy asset protection strategies that if you don't maintain them properly, they're not even worth the paper you're written them on. So try to stick to the basics first, and then as your wealth grows, we'll add all those sexy bells and whistles down the road. So that, my friends, is my legal tip for today. let's jump over to a tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, now I always like that tax tip riff a little bit more. Wish I could play the guitar some of these days, one of these days. It's on my bucket list. Okay, now for a tax tip. This is a good one. I did a Facebook Live today, and if you're following me on social media, please get over to my Facebook feed, and you'll see probably a 30 to 40 minute Facebook Live presentation with a whiteboard where I went through this topic further, and that is auto deduction strategies for 2018. Guys, under the new tax legislation that just came out, there's good, bad, and ugly. I've been talking about it for 2 months now. Good being this 20% pass-through deduction and a couple other little things. And then there's some bad. We've been talking about the meals and entertainment. But one of the good items, and I thought I'd be, you know, a little more positive today, is to talk about auto deductions. Now, let me give you the new little tip. The new tip is, you can depreciate your car faster than ever before. Let me give you an example. Last year, if you bought a $40,000 vehicle, believe it or not, the IRS classified that as a luxury vehicle. Can you believe that? The rules had not been updated for almost 20 years. A luxury vehicle was anything over $15,000. You know, that, you know, Gremlin back in 1972 just barely fell under the luxury auto definition. Well, the luxury auto limitation has now been lifted to $50,000 this year in 2018, which is pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of kind of snappy little cars that you can get for under $50,000. But last year, if you bought a $40,000 vehicle, it took you 19 years to depreciate it. Can you believe that? Because of the depreciation limits, the IRS felt that that was too expensive of a car. You can't depreciate it that quickly. So you got fuel, repairs, and maintenance, but you had to write the car over 19 years. It was a joke. And so what you would normally do is mileage. Now, there was some bonus depreciation and a few things that helped a little bit, but it still wasn't great. So the only time we do depreciation is on an SUV or a truck or even a larger truck or a van. And I go through that in that little Facebook Live that you can get over to on my social media. Please follow me. Just type in Mark Kohler on Facebook and you'll find my fan page and a great feed of daily tips and strategies and Facebook Lives weekly. But anyway, to focus on this issue, now in 2018, if you were to buy that $40,000 vehicle, you get bonus depreciation if it was new of up to an immediate $8,000 deduction. And you can start writing it off quickly with a $10,000 write-off in the first year, $9,000 or more, the next $16,000, $9,000. It's just start adding up. Within 3 years, you can deduct up to 71% of that vehicle. On top of that, fuel, repairs, and maintenance. And then the car is fully depreciated within 6 years. Now, that's a big deal. Now, here's the strategy. I was just in Honolulu over the weekend teaching a class to my amazing Hawaii clients. And I want to just say this. I know that many of you think of going to Hawaii. It's beautiful. It's warm. Sand and, you know, between your toes. And you're getting in the water and it's beautiful. But I mean this honestly. And I sometimes even get choked up saying it. I go to Hawaii more and more, not for the great weather and not for the amazing food, but I go for the people. The people of Hawaii really do have the aloha spirit. And I know that sounds a little cliche, but you would be shocked at Christmas time how many packages I get from my Hawaii clients, more than clients anywhere else in the country. Step it up, people. But around Christmas time, I get little packages from my Hawaii clients that are always so loving and kind. And when I'm in Hawaii, people bend over backwards and give me the shirt off their back to just help me feel comfortable when I'm there in Hawaii. And I just want to say thank you to you in the Hawaiian Islands. So I was there, and I was talking about the auto deduction strategy. And here's the point. For some of you that don't put on a lot of miles, which is typical of a Hawaii client, they're on an island. They don't drive a lot of miles. So why take the mileage deduction? Why not buy a car for under $50,000, under $58,000 to be exact, because you get the bonus depreciation, then you're under 50 with the other write-offs, and just do fuel and repairs and maintenance And I'll tell you, gas in Hawaii is a little more expensive than on the mainland. So buying a car just got better in Hawaii. And for some of you around the country that maybe don't put on a lot of miles, that write-off is pretty significant. And so I'm going to be talking about that more. I'm going to be doing an update to my books that kind of highlight that auto deduction. And I just want to throw it out there as a tax strategy. Don't think it's just mileage. For some of you that are in the market for a new car this year, get economical. Don't buy the sexy, expensive car over $50,000. Be economical. I love the book, The Millionaire Next Door. Buying a conservative car, living in a conservative home, building wealth. People, value your bank account more than you value the look of your car. Too many Americans chase this Jones attitude of keeping up with the Joneses down the street. And we've got to watch it. And I think that's a constant theme of our show, is that I don't want my entrepreneurs living extravagant lifestyles. I want you building a bank account so that you can have more financial freedom. And that's the title of my new book, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. And let me repeat that, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. If you don't own a business, I don't think you're going to love the book. But if you own a business, you've got to get it. I quote the experts out there. I talk about Tony Robbins' new book, Warren Buffett's strategies, what Wall Street doesn't want you to know. I'm not trying to be self-serving here, but there are some great strategies out there as a business owner that you need to start learning. A lot of people read the first chapter and go, Mark, you just spoke to my soul. Because I talk about what it's like to be an entrepreneur. I grew up selling things every time, everywhere. I had the lemonade stand. I sold raspberries. I sold hay on our farm. I had a janitorial business for 8 years. Guys, I plunged toilets for 8 years to get through college. I stripped and waxed floors. I cleaned carpets. I cleaned windows. That was my business. And I learned a lot about being in the trenches. And so, guys, there are some great tax strategies out there. Auto is one of them. Don't assume to just take the mileage deduction. Think outside of the box. Continue to listen to our strategies every week on our newsletter, and we'll be there for you. So that will, my friends, wrap up my tax tip. Let's get on to our topic of the hour. All right. Well, it's my pleasure now to introduce our guest, a returning guest to our show. This is Jaron Bergeson, senior attorney here at the firm of KKOS Lawyers, operating and managing our Southern Utah office. He originally went into broadcasting. He wanted to be on ESPN someday, but that dream was not fulfilled. We thought, you know, we need to have him out on on our Refresh Your Wealth show on a regular basis and broadcast through Blog Talk Radio and iTunes and Stitcher and just help fulfill that need in his life. So he's a huge wealth of knowledge on tax and legal strategies, and we're going to be talking about raising capital. I'll introduce that topic a little further here with my first question of him. But Jaron, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mark. I'm not a professional broadcaster, but I play one on a podcast.
There you go. Well, we're glad to have you. All right. Well, jumping right into it, the people listening to our show today want to maybe go out and raise capital. That is, go out and find some investors. Now, I've talked about this before on the show many, many times. There's a difference between partners, lenders, and investors. Now, if you want to go out and partner with someone and maybe put four or five people together, create an LLC, run it like a democracy, everybody gets to vote, everybody can complain, and you've got to disclose everything. Lots of people might be looking at the checkbook every day. They may even have check signing ability, and some of you are okay with that. Some of you are not. Now, we design those LLCs all day long, and they're very affordable, but they come with baggage because you are not a little dictator. You have to run it, like I said, a democracy. Others of you might just want to borrow money from people where you give them an interest rate or points, and they're happy with that. However, it's sometimes hard to find people that want to just loan money. They want to get a piece of the action. They'd be a lot more exciting for them, and they'd be more excited if they could actually participate in the upside. So that brings us to the investor. The investor says, I want a piece of the action. I want a part of the upside, and you're willing to take control of the project and give them intermittent reports, but you don't want them in your business. And that's called an investor. So you have to follow special rules when you choose to go down the investor route. So Jaron Bergeson is our resident expert and sets up what we call private placement memorandums. Some might even call it a glorified or simplified hedge fund, whichever perspective you might have. But it's you setting up your own fund to raise capital, to get on investors. So Jaron, that's kind of the intro to the world you work in. Before we get into some of the options of how to do this, what are some of your first cautionary points? Maybe with my little introduction, would you add to that? Maybe give them some other pros and cons when it comes to raising capital that just generally people should be aware of?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times people want to bring on, you know, cash partners, and that cash partner doesn't really want to participate at all. And you don't want them to participate. You want to run the show. They want to be real passive. Even if you have a small number of those people, you're in the investor realm. If those people aren't going to participate, they're investors, and you need to jump through these SEC and state law hoops, or you're going to run into big problems. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, they'll ruin your weekend just as quick as the IRS. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, good. Great comment. And I think I want to say this too. We don't want to dissuade any of you listeners from going out and raising capital and having investors. You just have to do it right. It's not the end of the world to go down this path, but there's extra hoops to jump through. I don't know. What would you say some of the cons are? Pros and cons, again.
Well, the main con of going down this route, where you're going to do an offering that's going to be filed with the SEC and filed with state securities regulators, it really is cost. I mean, it's expensive to do, relatively speaking. We can set up a partnership LLC for $1,000, $1,500. This might be 10 times that much. But if you really want to bring on millions of dollars in capital, and you want, and your investors want you to manage the fund and find the investments and make them a return on their investment, and that's what you want to do, then it's going to be worth it. If you really feel like you can make them a return on their capital and you a return on your investment of time and blood and sweat and tears, then, you know, $15,000, $20,000 up front in legal fees to make sure that you're not ending up, you know, in civil court with the SEC or in prison is probably worth it.
Yeah, I love it. Great comment. Now, earlier on in the show, when I was introducing the topic, I said, you didn't know this, Jaron, but I kind of told people, here's an example or two. You could raise $1 million from 10 investors, maybe 20 investors. You could raise $500,000 and take that bank account that you just raised this money in and doing it right, checking all the T's and dotting all the I's and, or sorry, checking all the boxes, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and you go out and you take this fund and you buy cryptocurrency. Or you buy Kentucky racehorses, or you buy a restaurant, or you buy fix and flips real estate. I mean, I've got all these different examples I've seen of clients over our years, 15 years of doing this, that have raised capital to do some pretty cool things. And they take 20% of the profit or more because they put the deal together. And the investors are happy and you're happy. What's a recent example of that you've done, Jaron? I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Is there a PPM recently that you did that? We call these private placement memorandums. That's kind of the term of art we all use, is PPM, private placement. What's one you've done lately that might be of interest to someone?
Well, the vast majority of the ones I've put together lately are for real estate. I'm getting ready to maybe put one together here for a group of investors that want to buy what they think are buildings of historical or architectural significance in not the major cities in America, but your Salt Lake cities and San Antonio, Texas, and, you know, big cities, but not the biggest cities, you know, fix them up, turn them into commercial rental real estate, that sort of thing, to get the return on investment that way. But they're really excited about, and their investors are excited about preserving historical buildings, architecturally significant buildings. I thought that was a pretty neat idea, you know, not just from a historical standpoint, well, we're going to preserve this, but we're going to preserve this building and we're going to make money at the same time.
I love it. Great example. Okay, so let's get into some nuts and bolts. So some of you out there, we've talked about some examples. If you want to just do a partnership with some people and you can live with a democracy where people might fire you or not be happy, fine. You might want to just borrow some money from someone if you can find a sucker. Usually tap family. They'd love to do that for you. But if you want to go out and get investors, I think there's really two or three main paths you can go down. First one is crowdfunding, which we'll talk about a little bit later. It's kind of the, you know, sexiest topic out there. I'm going to create a cool video, go to a portal, put up a website, see if I can get a bunch of people to give me $4,000 or $5,000 or $100 and raise some money. That's a crowdfund. There's some limits to it, and it's got its own baggage. And we'll come back to that in a moment. But I think what's more common is to go out and kind of solicit people personally or on the web and say, I want to raise $500,000 for this cool idea. That's called a private placement. And you have to file it with the SEC. And we as attorneys are on the hook if something goes wrong. That's why you pay a little bit more to the lawyers to put this together. So, Jerem, what are those two probably main options to go down when I want to raise capital? Because I think it comes down to advertising, really, kind of the way you're going to find people.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of an alphabet soup of regulations, regulation A, regulation B, C, D. But we're talking about here regulation D offerings under Rule 506 of the SEC regulations. And there are 506B offerings. And these are kind of the traditional offerings. These have existed for decades. They used to just be called Rule 506 offerings, but now it's 506B. And in this kind of offering, you're offering you're making offerings out to an unlimited number of accredited investors. Yes, these are people that have incomes north of $200,000 a year. If they're single, north of $300,000 for a married couple. They've got a net worth of $1 million or more. You can offer to an unlimited number of those people with a 506B offering, but you can't generally solicit that offering. You can't advertise that offering. You can't take out a Super Bowl ad for it. You can't put it in the newspaper. You can't send out a blast email to people that you have no or very little previous relationship with. The plus side of that, so you can't do that sort of general advertising.
Not on Facebook either. I can't go out on Facebook and say.
No, don't go on Facebook. You can. This is word of mouth advertising. People you have a pre-existing relationship with, either a family relationship or a business relationship, and then those people can go blab it to other people. But you can't go out and do these big advertising or even a blast email or put it on late night TV and say, come see me at the Hampton Inn in XYZ town. You can't do that sort of thing with a 506B offering. The trade-off, because you can't generally solicit, the SEC lets you get away with taking those people, the people that end up investing in your offering, if they tell you they're an accredited investor, if you put a questionnaire in front of them that says, here's the definition of an accredited investor, do you fit it? And they say yes, they check the box that says, yes, I'm an accredited investor, then you can hang your hat on that. You can rely on their assertion that they are an accredited investor. You don't have to investigate or verify that. That's a 506B offering.
And you can have as many as you want. You can have as many investors as you want to.
As many as you want, and an unlimited number of, an unlimited amount of capital you can raise. There's no ceiling on that.
Okay. But I cannot advertise. Okay, so there's the trade-off. So that's 506B. Right. Now, let's call that option one. Now, what is option two?
506C is the new option, new-ish. It's been the last 3 or 4 years that this has been available, where you can. So a 506C offering, you can go out and take out that Super Bowl ad or put it on a huge ad in the Wall Street Journal or whatever it is you want to do. Again, you can offer to an unlimited number of accredited investors. You can raise an unlimited amount of capital, But the trade-off is now, because you can generally solicit, you have to verify that these people are accredited investors. You have to get either tax returns or, you know, that show what their income is, or you have to get a list of, assets that is verified or that they verify. Or you can rely on a statement from their CPA or their attorney or their financial advisor that says, yes, they are an accredited investor. But if you don't have those things, if you didn't go out and verify that these people are accredited investors, then you lose. You have to verify. And that's the price you pay to be able to generally advertise your offering.
Okay, but I can raise unlimited amounts, and I can have unlimited investors, and I can put it on Facebook. But when they say, I want to invest with you, you got to put them through a rigorous amount of paperwork and verification to let them know if they're legit. Now, an accredited investor, again, is they're making $200,000 to $300,000 a year or have $1 million in the bank, something like that, right?
Right. $1 million net worth, but their home, the value of their personal residence, doesn't count towards that $1 million.
Okay. $1 million net worth or a significant amount of annual income. Now,
right.
One of the questions I get regularly is one of the old rules that I could only have up to 35 investors or something. Is that still a rule in some area?
It's out there. It's in both. It's in Rule 506. Rule 506 says you can also, for both 506B and C, offer to up to 35 non-accredited investors. So you can have up to 35 non-accredited investors. The problem with that is, and reason it's basically kind of fool's gold, is the regulations say you have to give those people basically all of the disclosures that you would give to someone in a full-blown public IPO offering, audited financial statements, all kinds of – it would increase your fees from – we might do a 506 B or C with just accredited investors for $15,000 to $25,000. You're going to pay 10 to 20 times that to CPAs and attorneys if you want to include up to 35 non-accredited. So it's in the rules, but it's sort of fool's gold. I tell people there are other ways to get around that. There's a Rule 504 offering that makes you jump through a lot more hoops at the state level. But when people want to go non-accredited, I go in that direction. Or if they want to raise less than $1 million, then crowdfunding is a way to go.
Okay. Well, let's jump over to crowdfunding. So if someone says, I want to raise less than $1 million, and usually crowdfunding I've seen is typically a product, a service, a small business, something that is more brick and mortar, not just going out and doing real estate or investing in cryptocurrency. Would you agree? It's kind of, 'cause it's something that people can relate to.
Yeah, it's usually tied to something a lot more tangible than, hey, give me some money, I'm going to go invest in this sort of thing and I'll bring you back money. It's, hey, we have a great idea for this product or this service, like you said, we're going to be the next, McDonald's, but we're going to start small and do one restaurant somewhere. Okay, that's a crowdfund.
So with a crowdfund, I can only raise up to $1 million.
Right.
But what is cool is I can have as many investors as I want. I can take non-accredited and I can advertise on Facebook, but if I'm correct, you can only take up to $5,000 for most people. It's a very limited contribution amount because they don't want people to lose their shirt. So they kind of restrict how much someone can put in.
Yeah, I think 5,000 is the number. I'd have to check on that to make sure, but it's a small number. You're not going to be able to take 50 grand from any one person or even 20, I think, in a crowdfund.
Yeah, and there's some limits based on your annual income and a percentage of it and this and that. And I think one other con when it comes to crowdfunding is you have to work with a crowdfunding portal, and they're going to want a piece of the action. They're going to not be terribly cheap, but they have a portal where they kind of get the word out for you. And if they're really excited about what you're doing, I know that you can get some special deals sometimes with a crowdfund. But it's another option. And I've known people that have raised a lot of money very quickly. They got a cool idea. And they get it off the ground, they start manufacturing, and everybody's kind of excited. Well, okay, this is exciting. So lots of options when people want to raise capital. You mentioned cost a minute ago. I want to go there because people think, oh, this is great, and then they hear this word of $15,000 or $20,000. You know, I talked to a client the other day that had spent $35,000 to $40,000 doing a PPM, and I was like, what? You know, we do it for half that or less. Why didn't you call us? And they said, well, we didn't know you did that. And so this is not an infomercial, but I do want to let people know the prices could be all over the board. How would you address that, Jerem?
Yeah, and it can be all over the board. And, you know, we have a fairly big spread in what we charge, depending on, are you going to have multiple classes of investors? You know, are you going to give preferred returns to people? How many states are you going to offer this in? Do you anticipate getting investors from 25 states? Well, then I got to go file this in, I got to file your form. It's called a Form D for your offering in those 25 states versus a couple states. You can get it done with us for, you know, typically 15 to 25,000, depending on how complex it is. And depending on how many states you're offering.
And the money you raise can pay the legal fee.
So, right.
So it's not bad.
Right.
And sometimes what you have to do is front the money up front. You know, up front, you have got to come up with the cost to get this thing off the ground. But as the money rolls in, you can reimburse yourself and make sure you get the launch done. A lot of times, isn't that right, Jerem? People will say, well, I'm going to raise this money, but if I don't raise enough, you can give it back to the people. You kind of have a threshold, right?
Yeah, we almost always want that, where usually we want to tell people, even though you can take an unlimited amount, you want to tell people in your offering, this is the most we're going to raise is 25 million. And the least we're going to raise is 5 million. If we only raise 3 million, that's not enough to do what we want to do. So we will return all of that money. So you want to have a floor and a ceiling. That gives people a much better idea of what they're getting into. And it gives you a better idea. You know, you're raising enough to make this work and not too much. You know, if it goes gangbusters, you can raise too much. It can be a situation where you've got more assets under your control than you want. So you got to be smart about the floor and the ceiling.
Yeah. Well, I want to make a summary point on this. And then Jerem, I'll let you give the last word, but I just want people to realize that it's very doable. In the big picture of things, it's really quite affordable. If you're going to raise $500,000 or $1 million, $15,000 is maybe less than 2% or 1% or in some case to get where you need to be to start this business. So don't be dissuaded by the cost of this. And the second thing is, be realistic about the management control you want. A lot of people say, I want partners, and I just want people to give me money, and they call them investors. Do not use the I word. It's like the F word of the SEC. If you're going to call someone an investor, then you better treat them like an investor. You can't call someone an investor or a partner and treat them like one or the other. For example, if you want an LLC, you want five partners, they're all going to put in $100,000. Well, there's a good chance they're going to have majority control of the company, even though you're the manager. Well, if they don't like what you're doing, they can fire you. Now, that may freak you out. Well, that's why you go down the PPM route. So if you treat it like a partnership, it's got to be a democracy. Remember that. A PPM lets you be a dictator, which is kind of cool. But you also lay out in advance what your plan is, and people are signing up for the plan. And as long as you don't rip them off or cheat them, you're covered. This is your get-out-of-jail-free card. Anyway, Jerem, final word on this. Anything you'd recommend for people out there trying to raise capital?
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, if you want the control, then, you know, you're going to have to go down this investor route, the PPM route, and you've got to disclose. That's the other thing. And the documents we draft, we are telling people all the bad things that could happen, all the ways you could lose their money. That is what our job is. We're not there to sell your offering. There may be an exhibit to the offering that's your kind of salesy document. But that offering is there to say, here's the risk factors. Here's the potential conflicts of interest. So that if something bad happens down the road, you can point to the document and say, I said that might happen. This was disclosed. I told you I was going to take the $20,000 attorney fee out of what I raised. You've got to disclose that if you're going to do it. So just know that what we're doing is not trying to sell your offering. We're trying to cover your behind if bad things happen.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Jerem, thank you for being with us. Again, we always enjoy your contribution to the show. I know, Jerem, in fact, when Matt and I have been out of town simultaneously, Jerem has even hosted the show and he's done a fantastic job. So, folks, if you want to get a consultation on this matter, just invest in an hour with Jerem. If you move forward, he'll take that hour of money and apply it towards the overall cost, or you walk away with some good answers and you can decide where to go to next. But remember, guys, free advice is what you paid for it. It's free, and it may not be the best advice out there. So invest a few bucks, and I know Jerem can point you in the right direction, and then you can decide where to go next. So, Jerem, thank you. Hope to have you back.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Well, everybody, thanks again for listening to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Matt Sorensen and I will be back next week with our open forum show where we take your questions live. If you want to start emailing those questions to Matt or I, it's first come, first serve, and also live callers get priority. So put it on your calendar for next Wednesday at noon Mountain Time. If you're getting our newsletter, you will get the link and the phone number to call so that you can listen on your computer and then switch over to your phone when you're ready to ask a question online. We hope to be there for you to help you on your quest to better live the American dream. I want to thank all of you for listening, and don't give up. It's hard out there. It's hard on all of us, but it's better sometimes than working for someone else. And we love the autonomy we have with the attorneys in our office who all work as entrepreneurs here to help you build your business too. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.